All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Midnight Ride, episode number 54, I believe. It's getting up there. A lot has happened this week in the New England Revolution, and there's so much to talk about, but we've got so many things to cover. And first, let me introduce my co-host tonight. It's Mr. Steven Storr from TheBentMusket.com. Steve, welcome back, first of all. It's been a long time.
It has. It's good to be back. Thanks for having me on, Hank.
It's always good to have you on, man, even though you sound like you're sitting in a wind tunnel somewhere. But it's quite all right. I understand how these, you know, you're back in, you're a student again, and you got to watch your expenses and all this other stuff. So,
I lost my old mic, the one that actually worked real well. So I'm using the one that's built in the laptop, and it sucks.
Well, that's, yeah, take what you can get, right? But anyway, hey, so there's a lot to talk about, obviously, with New England Revolution. You know, when my last podcast was right after Steve Nichol was fired, I spoke with Taylor Twellman. Lots of stuff happened there. And lots of stuff has happened since. You know, the Revolution have been very busy looking for a new coach, and at the same time decided to announce a little reorganization within the walls at Foxborough Stadium, at least in the Kraft Soccer Department. So joining Steve Nichol out on the street is Mr. Sunil Gulati. And a lot of people, you know, are thinking, I have a particular view on this, but a lot of people are thinking that he's still around and still going to have some kind of impact, and that Brian Bolello and Mike Burns, who are two of the guys from the old organization, have basically assumed new roles, and on paper, it appears to be a promotion for both of these guys. I don't know, Steve, what are your thoughts on the first restructuring news?
Well, it's only a promotion for them if they're getting paid more. I mean, they're definitely getting more responsibility, the two of them. So that, I guess you can look at it that way, but
that's kind of my thinking on it too. It's just,
yeah,
I'm thinking that, you know, unless we don't, and we won't know if they're getting paid more, but you know,
Guy
goes from COO to president. On paper, it looks like a promotion. Vice president to general manager, it's kind of a lateral move for me, I think, for Mike Burns. And frankly, it should have been his job all along.
Well, yeah, and it seems like a lateral move. But, I mean, again, I've had conversations with people where we kind of realized that Mike I don't want to say he didn't do a lot, but he didn't do a lot.
No, he didn't, and I think
Steve did a lot of the stuff. Stevie Nichol did almost all the stuff. So now that Mike's going to move into the GM role, at least responsibilities wise, it's not lateral. He's definitely taking on a lot more responsibility, which is a good thing. I mean, if you're not a Mike Burns fan, the organization is giving him all the rope he needs to hang himself.
Exactly my thoughts.
And if you're on the fence or you're ambivalent or you are a Mike Burns fan, then now you get to see him actually do some work and see what he can really do with the keys, I guess, to the keys to the whole organization.
Right.
So I'm honestly kind of excited about it just because we look like a normal club now. Like that's very refreshing.
Exactly. And you know, and a lot of people are really saying, I'm getting kind of tired of it too, because, you know, there was an extra layer of management in this organization before, which really kind of handcuffed the organization, in my opinion, and that was Sunil Gulati, and he was the president of Kraft Soccer, and people forget that. He was the president. Brian Bolello wasn't the president. Mike Burns wasn't the president. Steve Nichol wasn't the president. It was Sunil Gulati, and Sunil Gulati made it to three games last season, and I think one of them was a home game.
Yeah, I saw him at the home game in the coach's office.
Right, and so, I mean, Sunil Gulati, obviously a very smart guy. He's got very, you know, soccer ties across the world through his work with the United States Soccer Federation. And he's up for the CONCACAF job, and more power to him. He might, as a soccer insider on the international side, he might be well-suited to that. But he wasn't doing a lot for the Revolution, and every contract – The big contracts that needed to be signed, it needed to be ratified by him, and he negotiated them, and he did all the big deals. So if you're looking for somebody to blame for Marko Perović not getting his contract extension or not getting the money he was expecting, I think you could look at Sunil Gulati. Same with Ilya Stolica. I think you can look at Sunil Gulati there too. You know, you're if you're looking to lay blame for why these guys aren't here, I would start with the president.
I don't want to blame him for missteps. I would blame him for absence.
Yes.
You know, like he's just not there. He didn't, and it's not necessarily his fault. I mean, he's the president of the USSF and he's a tenured professor, I think, at Columbia.
Right.
So it's definitely a lot to juggle, but the organization should have thought about this a long time ago, frankly.
Yep.
I don't know. He's retained now as a special advisor. It was funny. I kind of thought that meant that he'd just be like, you know, popping in once in a while to talk. But one of the only productive conversations I've ever had with the man, Ted Westerveld, we all know him as Soccer Reform.
Yep.
Actually kind of alerted me to the fact that in most businesses, if you're a quote-unquote special advisor, that just basically means you're getting paid a whole hell of a lot to do a whole lot of nothing.
That's...
So he's probably still getting paid by Kraft Sports Group and Kraft Soccer just to hop in once in a while and say, hey guys, you want Spain at Foxborough or something like that.
Right. And that's kind of what I was thinking. I actually made that comment myself on Twitter today and saying that any other job in the world, that means you're basically fired. You've basically been stripped of your power and you've been, you know, allocated to some other menial task, which may or may not have some bearing on the organization. Special projects is what we used to call it in my old job. But that's what happened with Sunil Gulati. I mean, they basically figured out that the structure that they had wasn't working. Sunil Gulati wasn't being effective in that role. If he was being effective in that role, they wouldn't have gotten rid of him. Period. The end. You know, it's that simple, guys. So
it really is.
There's a reason why he left. Anyway, the upshot is there's a new sheriff in town, Brian Bilello, and he's responsible for making sure that Mike Burns does his job, and Mike Burns is responsible for getting a head coach, getting the players, and putting a soccer product on the field that everybody can be proud of and that's supposed to win. So hopefully this is the start of something good for the Revolution. At least we'll be able to say it's, you know, Mike Burns hasn't been able to get the players or, you know, what's his name? Brian Bilello is not holding Mike Burns accountable. I think there's more accountability there. We'll never know with this organization just because the way it works. The Revolution aren't a very open organization when it comes to, like, we've given Mike Burns $2 million to go sign a designated player and he can't find one. They will never say that. We will never know if that's the case or not. So we're just going to have to, you know, see how effective the product on the field is and then make our judgment from there.
That's what I like most about the whole move is it puts targets on people's backs. Now, if things go wrong, we know who to blame. I mean, even before, you know, with Stevie being in charge of everything, I mean, a lot of us didn't really know that.
No,
we didn't really realize just how much control he had, and so it was tough to blame him for everything because, you know, we had all these other people in these amorphous roles that we thought were contributing. And the cool thing is now, you know, if things go wrong, we can say, why the heck did we sign those guys? Mike Burns, that's your fault. You know, why did this why is this happening this way? Why does Mike Burns still have a job after he signed all these terrible guys? Brian Bilello, it's your fault. You know, or on the other hand, we can honestly say, you know, if we make a couple really good signings and things start to turn around, that maybe these two guys, you know, we can look at the crafts and say, why didn't this happen sooner?
Right.
So, specifically in the case of Brian, like, I've met Brian, I've talked to him, and I know from what I heard about how he handled the Fortgate situation, I was disappointed. But other than that, I think I'm very excited for him to have more responsibility to the team. He's a great guy. He's fun to talk to. He obviously gives a crap.
Yeah,
he's genuinely interested in the team moving forward, not just because it's his job, but because he's genuinely interested, and that comes through every time you talk to him. So I'm actually pretty excited to see him get the extra the extra responsibility, because I want to see what if he can really run with it, because I think he will. If he's given the chance, I think he will.
Right. I'm inclined to agree with you. Just, you know, I like you. I'm kind of a fan of Brian Bilello from the fact that Brian Bilello is an actual fan of this team. You know, you can see it when he's if you run into him after games and it was a tough game or a particularly good game. You know, I remember walking out of the locker room and saw him. I think it was after the Kansas City game, or it was after the first game with Brian and with Benny Failhaber and Marco. And you could just start he was getting really excited about seeing that combination work on the field, and he wouldn't stop talking about it. It was really kind of fun just to sit there and talk to him about, you know, the Failhaber Marco Perovic connection that was, you know, which unfortunately was very short lived, but you know, it was the death knell really for, because I think Perovic got injured and shortly thereafter, and that was the whole end of that. But my point being is that Brian Bilello is a guy. He'll come out to the parking lot, the tailgate lot. He'll hang out with you. He'll talk to you. He'll you know, at special events, he'll come out and you know, shake your hand and ask you what you think, what's going on, what you'd like to see. And, you know, I've seen him late night after games at, you know, CBS Scene or at Louis, and, you know, he'll be just hanging out and he'll talk your ear off about the game that just happened, which is great. So, you know, I'm excited from that standpoint. But, you know, also
I don't mean to interrupt, but to that point, I think after the restructuring happened, a really telling tweet was when I assume Kyle runs the Rebellion Twitter feed, but the Rebellion Twitter feed tweeted out Brian Bilello is the guy that comes to your tailgates. Sunil Gulati didn't even come to games.
Exactly. And that's kind of my whole point. It's a guy that kind of, you can tell, he cares a lot more. He's much more visible. And, you know, if this guy's going to be coming out to your tailgates, if he stops coming to the tailgates, then we're going to have a problem. But as long as he keeps coming to the tailgates where you can see him, you know, and talk to him and say, Brian, what is going on? You know, this coach you just hired doesn't seem to know what he's doing, or, you know, this designated player isn't working out, or are you going to get him some help, or are you going to get somebody who can score, you know? It's going to be a much better situation, I think, and it'll be a much more visible face for Revolution fans. And I don't want to sound like a Revolution apologist here. We need to hold this team accountable for its actions. But before, I didn't know who to hold accountable. You know, it's like, what is Sunil Gulati's role? Who's going to hire the new coach coming in? Who's going to who's going to protect the players for the expansion draft? Who's going to pick the guys in the whatchamacallit, in the re-entry draft or the super draft? These are all, you know, questions that kind of need to be answered last week whilst they're getting, you know, I think, and we'll talk a little bit in a minute, but the expansion draft is, what, 2 weeks away, if that. It's the 23rd, right?
Yeah, I think they have to have, the thing about that is I believe they don't have to have their final protected list in until the 21st. So if they stick to that 7-day timeline that Brian talked about in the conference call,
right,
then the coach will have for at least a week.
Yeah, he should have.
And frankly, if you've been following MLS, you can probably figure out who needs to be protected and who doesn't. Because the chances are that unless you leave somebody like ridiculous, like Benny or Soares unprotected, Montreal's not going to take anybody off this roster. And it sucks to say it, but it's the cold hard truth.
It is true. And so it's really not, I mean, I could see them taking and taking a couple of players. We could talk about it in a minute or two, but because I actually pulled out a couple of names that I thought might be good targets. But I also picked a few guys that I think would definitely be a good core group to build on going forward. Because, you know, by the end of last season, we saw some pretty good play. We missed a few games just by, you know, we missed out on winning games just by a few minutes, literally. And I really think that can be addressed with coaching. And I don't think, you know, I think that there was something inherently wrong with the team last season where they just mental lapses or whatever, you've got to perform for the full 90 minutes. But if the same problem is persisting week in, week out, then it comes down to, you know, there's a coaching that something's going wrong there.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what the coach is there for.
Right.
You can sit there and you can blame the players, and they do shoulder a great amount of the blame because they're the ones, you know, you can't blame Steve Nichol because Ryan Cochran can't track a long ball from the goalkeeper.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you can't, but at the same time, when these mistakes are happening over and over and over again, every game, something is going wrong. It's the same reason why I say it's weird that we always have a huge injury list. I think there's something wrong about the way the team is trained. If there's a pattern, then someone's not doing something right.
Right.
And at the end of the day, the person who's accountable for that is always the coach.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, and that kind of gets back to the whole issue with, you know, the performance on the pitch, et cetera, et cetera. So they're going to need to get somebody in there as soon as possible, obviously, and then lock down this roster. But let's go ahead and talk about the expansion draft coming up. And I think the rules are that homegrown players are protected. So, and Generation Adidas players are protected.
Yep, and you have to protect, I don't know, it's something like your total number of, or like for internationals, you have to protect, you can only
protect three, I think.
No, you have to protect enough so that you can only, I think you can only leave three unprotected or something like that.
Yeah, hold on.
It's some weird, like, reverse math thing.
It is weird. It is weird. Hold on a second. We've got something right here on this. Clubs are restricted in the number of international players that they make available. So they can only make available a number of international players equal to their total number of international players minus three. So they have to... they have to protect three, is what they're saying.
Yes.
Unless they have less than three.
Yeah, you're forced to protect three unless you have less than three.
Right.
My list, I mean, that works for my list. So.
Yeah. I haven't really double-checked my list on that yet, but I think I'm okay. So, go ahead. Why don't you start, and I'll see where we agree.
All right. I'm going to go off of the list in the Ben Musket that myself, Corey, and Maddie came up with.
Sure.
We had nine consensus picks, and I'm going to fill in my two on the little picks, the ones that I want, because I'm on the podcast. Now, definitely the obvious ones, and this was in order of I thought of it, AJ Soares, Benny Failhaber, Reiko Lekic, which I want to talk about for a second when I'm done, Chris Tierney, Milton Caraglio, Moncef Zerka, Darius Barnes, Shari Joseph, Matt Reese. Those are consensus picks. And then on the bubble, I want to protect Ryan Guy.
Yep.
And I'm torn between Kevin Austin and Stephen McCarthy.
Very interesting.
So talking about, going back to Reiko real quick, though, the thing about Reiko is I do think you can afford not to protect him, given the year that he had, because his salary is prohibitive.
Yep.
I don't know that Montreal would take interest in him because of his salary. They might. It's a risk because he definitely has undoubted potential, and put him on a team with better service and, you know, maybe a better vibe, and he could probably drop the double digit goals this week. But I don't know if $285,000 is something that Montreal is going to want to eat up for what he did last year.
Right.
You know, 20 some odd appearances, six goals. So you might be able to afford to leave him available if you're really, if you want to keep Ryan Guy, Stephen McCarthy, and Kevin Alston, or if you want to put Franco Correa on that list or somebody else, you know, protect Shuttleworth again, because for some reason protecting two goalkeepers must be a good idea.
Not a good idea.
No, I think it's a terrible idea, but I think you can afford, you might be able to afford to leave him off. I just don't want to, because I want to take the risk. I think that next year, he and Milton can build a real, real devastating partnership if we have Milton back. So, I want to keep him. I want to make sure he's protected. Plus, he's my third international. So,
yep. I am agreed on all of those. I actually did include Alston in my list. And I'll tell you why, is that we don't have any right backs. And as much as he ineffective as he was at times, he also is a is an athletic player. He likes to get forward. I like that part of his game. And I think that with some different coaching, they actually might utilize that part of his game with more effect. That's the reason why they're also. I mean, we're incredibly thin on defense. The other defenders that they have, Coria and Cochran, I don't think are guys that we want to afford a spot to, so to speak. The downside in Alston is he's kind of expensive. He'll be. I'm not sure what his salary was last season, but it was getting up there. So unless they can, and I don't know when his contract's up either. That's the other part.
I don't know about his contract, but I do know his salary is in the six figures. It's well over, it's over $100,000.
Yeah,
I know that.
Well, he was a first round pick. I mean, he's going to have a big number.
Well, he's still making his GA money, his Generation Adidas money, even though he's not a Generation Adidas player anymore.
Right.
And, forgive the typing for a second, but I have a little interesting comparison I want to bring up that I figured out a while ago.
Go for
given
it.
His stats. Just a second.
And the other guy that we got to talk about, and while you're pulling that up, I just want to mention this because I don't want to forget about it, is Shari Joseph is out of contract. And I'm not sure how that plays in the whole expansion draft. If he is unprotected and he's out of contract, I mean, he'll have to go into the re-entry draft anyway. Is that because he's an existing...
Yeah, but the expansion draft happens first, and I think when you lose a player in the reentry draft, you get a supplemental draft pick. So
yes, it's true.
I'm pretty sure that they're going to protect him just because if he leaves, they don't want to lose him for nothing.
Exactly.
I mean, they're still not going to get value for him, frankly, but they don't want to lose him for absolutely nothing. Now, the stat, by the way, that I was thinking of, Kevin Alston has played three seasons in New England.
Mm-hmm.
His career totals. In league play, no goals, three assists. We know he has the one goal in Super League of Play.
Right.
Okay. A previous right fullback or defender that we had play with us, James Riley.
Right.
In a three-year period with the New England Revolution from 05 to 07, he totaled only three assists and a goal. Same stats.
Yep.
Okay? But that was playing in a three-man back line. Fast forward to his time with the Seattle Sounders, he has nine assists and a goal.
Yeah, but okay. you're not counting all the own goals he had too. But no. But I actually liked Riley a lot, and you know, and that's the thing with when you're playing in a three-man back line, you're generally not getting as forward as much, right? You're playing a little bit more reserved because you're backing up that five-man midfield. But the thing that I think is telling about that particular stat is that's the system, right? It's the same system under the same coach, different backs, and basically both rendered ineffective. Now Riley's gone. He's gone out. He went off to San Jose first, and then to Seattle.
He's in San Jose too, and now he's in Seattle, and he's one of the better attacking fullbacks in the league.
Yep.
He's. I mean, he doesn't have the same blinding speed that Alston has, but he's a better defender. And he's a lot better going forward.
Yeah. In fact, Taylor Twellman mentioned him by name when he was on
that's what made me think of it. I was listening to that, and I heard him say that. And Taylor made perfect sense. There are a lot of players on those teams from the middle of the last decade that should still be here.
Yeah.
Or that we haven't adequately replaced.
We definitely haven't adequately replaced.
James Riley is totally one of them.
Yep.
Regardless of the fact that it was a different system when he was here. He still was very good in the system that he played in. I mean, I would play a three-man back line right now if it was James Riley, Michael Parkhurst, and Avery John. I'd do it. You know, or Jay Heaps. I'd do it.
Yep.
In a heartbeat. Compared to what we've been playing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I'm with you there. And I think, you know, you could even probably do it with Kevin Alston. Did you say Alston or Riley? I'm sorry.
I said Riley.
Yeah, I thought you did. Okay, so I think you could make a three-man backline work if you keep that core midfield that you have. And this brings up, we were talking a little bit about Shari Joseph. if the expansion draft does in fact take place and Shari Joseph is considered part of the New England roster, which I guess is my, I haven't seen anything. What I haven't looked entirely too hard to find the answer, mind you, but I haven't seen anything saying that he is off the roster and he is and therefore not eligible to be picked up in the expansion draft. So I need to protect him. Like
his
you
contract
said.
Runs to December, I believe.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure he's still contracted to New England unless they let him go of their own volition.
Right. Well, the expansion draft last year, I mean, not the expansion draft, the re-entry draft was in December. So players out of contract were made available for that re-entry draft in December. So maybe it's December 1st. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I mean. His contract's going to run out before the re-entry draft. I'm almost positive.
Yeah.
Because MLS does the cookie-cutter contracts, at least in terms of length, and when options come up and stuff like that, it's almost always the same. There's very little room to wiggle.
Gotcha.
Because it's all league negotiated. So, right. For the most part, everybody's contract kind of ends on the same, couple of different days throughout the year.
Right.
So I'm pretty sure that to make that work, that was one of the things that they did. They had to make sure the reentry draft was after that December contract ending. Contract ending date.
Yep. So my three foreigners that I'm protecting are Lekic, Karai, Leo, and Zurica, just like you. I also had Ryan Guy. I think he's a valuable player and showed a lot of drive, especially at the end of the season, worked very hard and did well. He scored two goals in the embarrassing defeat in Chicago where we almost
should have played all year. I love Zurica. I think he did very well coming here, scored two goals in a short span of time, added a lot to the attack, but you didn't need to make that move if you're playing Ryan Guy every week.
Right.
I'm sorry. I felt that way all year after we got him.
Yeah, he's good. He's very good, and I am I'm a big fan. And I actually like him and Zurica on the field at the same time. I think Zurica, I remember just that was the linchpin in that fabulous goal that Shari Joseph scored, where Shari passes it forward to Caraglio, who basically backheels it to Zurica. Zurica puts it back across in front of the goal, and Shari heads it in. I think it was against Houston.
Oh yeah, that was beautiful.
We were holding. Here we are. These guys, Houston is going to the freaking MLS Cup. Yeah, we were 36 seconds away from beating them, 2 months ago. It's just incredible to think. Houston at one point was lower than we were, and it's kind of this league just drives you crazy sometimes. But anyway, the other part that I wanted to quickly if. Montreal was to look towards New England players, and you didn't protect McCarthy. I could see them maybe taking McCarthy. He's a good player. He's going to be a strong. He'll definitely be a strong backup for you. But I also see them taking Niasse just for his speed alone. And if you can bring that speed, because you can't coach speed. And
I don't know. Maybe I might be jumping the gun because with a new coach, things could change. And
exactly.
With Sani's twin brother Sana is now a pretty good MLS player, makes plenty of far better decisions than Sani does. So,
but they're playing different positions, right?
They aren't. I mean, Sana still plays in the wing sometimes too, and he still makes better decisions when he's running down the flank. Like if you watch Colorado's games, he still goes down the flank a lot.
Yep.
And he makes better decisions. Every time.
Yeah.
He doesn't always make the right decision, but no player does this league. But Sana makes so many more better decisions than Sani has since he first got here. So with a new coach, maybe things would change, but I felt the same way about Alston, but with, Niasse and Mansali, I'm done. I'm done waiting for the potential. I'm done keeping them around just because they're such supreme athletes and they occasionally can do great things. I want consistency. And I don't see us getting it out of Saint-Niasse at any point in time. I definitely see him maybe getting picked up in Montreal and becoming consistent there because that happens all the time to us.
Yeah.
But I don't see it happening here. I let him go. You know what I mean? If Montreal wants him, I hope it works out for him because he's a nice guy. And, it's been fun.
Yeah, you know, I'd be kind of like, he's on the bubble for me, right? Because I want to keep the speed on the bench. I think that it's a valuable asset to have. I think a new coach might be able to bring more out of him. And we'll have to wait and see if he actually stays here or not. But that, you know, I could see him coming up in a new system, coming off and under the bench, and coming off of the bench and late in games where we need the extra speed up top. Not maybe in a tight game situation, but somebody who can, you know, challenge the defense, stretch them out a little bit. I think with proper utilization, all these guys could be much better players. So I think a lot of it was a stale old system that Steve Nichol liked to keep. And when players stopped fitting into that system, he would just replace them rather than use the talent that he had. Anyway, that's neither here nor there anymore because Steve Nichol's gone. And we'll just have to wait and see who the new coach is, which brings up the next topic, which we need to talk about. Who do you think the next coach is going to be? Let me ask you, who do you want it to be?
I don't have an answer for who do I want it to be?
Yeah.
I actually do have an answer for that. I want the Revolution to throw money at Ray Hudson because I love that man. And if you actually look at his MLS coaching record, the short time that he was there, you know, 3 or 4 years that he coached, he was really good. You know, Miami or Tampa Bay? Miami first, Miami Fusion, their last year of existence when they won the Supporters Shield.
Right.
They were largely considered the best team in MLS.
Right.
Then he moved to D.C., mixed results. I was talking to Brian Strauss about it. He said it kind of made a meal of things in D.C. a little bit. But,
yep.
You know, his record's still, it's still a winning record. You know what I mean? It's not a bad record at all. And, I mean, just, Hank, can you imagine going to those press conferences? Oh, my God. I wouldn't care if we lost every game 6-0. That would be great. Oh, my God, that would be fantastic. Every single time. I mean, if you hear some of the stories about the press conferences he gave when he was still coaching, Miami won a game 5-0, and he came in and started screaming at reporters because he was pissed off because he felt like his team didn't put in enough effort. And then his last game in D.C., when he got bounced out of the playoffs, he basically said, somebody give me a blindfold and a cigarette. Like, I just stuff, oh, my God. The stuff that comes out of his mouth is mind-boggling, and I love it.
Yeah, it's he's definitely comic relief, which is fantastic. But I don't know. I think the team needs it needs a shot of something. And
that would be a shot of something.
It definitely would be. You got me on that. I'm not sure if it's the right shot. I mean, it could be more like a shot of whiskey versus a shot of penicillin. I think the team needs a hybrid coach, really does. It needs some youthful vigor, like I want to say Caleb Porter. You know,
if he hadn't just taken the U23 job, that would have been my top choice.
Right.
I would have been all about it.
Yep.
But I don't think he's still coaching, he's still full time at Akron and
yep.
He's doing the U23. He's not going anywhere.
No, he isn't. He isn't. So
thinking realistic candidates, if I'm thinking about it, who do I want? It'd be great to get Ralston for a lot of sentimental reasons, but I don't know if I want him just because he's got a year and a half of assistant coaching experience. I don't think he's ready, and I don't think he's had enough time under Dom Kinnear or anybody else to really change his philosophy. He'd come in probably coaching like Stevie did.
You know, I don't know if
that's the only real experience.
Yeah, I don't know because when he was here as a player, it's a different scenario because he was the boss of that field. He managed that team from the field perspective and the players as captain. He was really the driving force. I think Stevie just put people through their paces. Saw a real decline in performance after Ralston left. And, you know, a lot of those same players were still around. Granted, we also lost, you know, you lose your leading goal scorer in Taylor Twellman. Some other key players all left around the same time. Bad news for the Revs. But I think Ralston, for me, like the lack of experience concerns me, but then I think about guys like Jason Kreiss, who had zero experience when he became head coach. I mean, he was playing one day and then he was coaching the next. It was
stop for a second and think about the organization that happened with, because he's not the only one either.
Right.
But stop and think about the organization that is backing him.
Yep, I agree. It's a
you know what? We might be taking steps in the right direction, but
we're not there yet.
Darth Lagerwey, you know what I mean? Robert Kraft is not Dave Checkitz. That's not the same thing.
Not the same at all. Not the same at all. But you know, for all we know. And I can't think. I really don't think Mike Burns is going to be a long term general manager for this team. I really don't. I think that they needed to make some changes immediately because this is stuff that I spoke with Taylor about, is that anybody that comes in to this organization needs to know who he's going to report to, and he needs to know how much authority he's going to have in terms of the coaching staff and the players he can pick and all this other stuff. And if you're looking at, for this kind of player, we have to talk to Sunil. This type of player, we need to talk to, Mike Burns needs to make this kind of decision. Or this kind of player, you know, if you just want to bring in some kid from the streets of Cameroon, then, yeah, go ahead. That's not a problem. It's those kinds of gray areas that I think got the Revolution into trouble in the past. Now I think that they needed to put in the structure in place so that they could get a coach in here and say, okay, yes, this is the pecking order. All your decisions on your roster will have to be approved by Mike Burns, and then any designated players or exorbitant contracts will need to be further approved by Brian Bilello. And there you go. You've got instant structure for a new coach to work with, whereas before you didn't have it. But long-term, I don't know. I don't think Mike Burns says, I mean, he might prove us all wrong. This could have been the opportunity he's been waiting for his whole career. But he's been with the organization for more than a few years now. And, you can reward some person so many times for being a good soldier, but eventually this guy's got to start, being held accountable and giving you some results. So it'll be interesting to see how he manages this job. What else are we going to talk about, Steve?
We haven't really gone over any other candidates.
No.
The coaching job. I mean, you think about what Kyle tweeted the other day, Kyle McCarthy, or earlier today, about the four candidates that were among the dozen that the Revs talked to.
Right.
You know, that confirmed that Ralston, Heaps, Mariner, and I think the most intriguing name on the list for me, Brian Bliss.
Right.
Has been spoken to. I like and I don't like the idea of Brian Bliss. I like the idea of Brian Bliss because he was the master. He was the architect behind the Columbus Crew turnaround in the middle of the last decade that led to the Shiloto years and the MLS Cup and the Supporters Shield and all that.
And then they replaced him with Siggy Schmidt.
Say that again?
Then they replaced him with Siggy Schmidt.
No, he wasn't the coach.
Oh, he wasn't the coach?
No, he was basically the GM. He was the player, the technical director. He was rebuilding from the ground up, and that's what he's doing right now. And that was this year. Columbus completely retooled again, and they made the playoffs. People thought that they were going to be worse than us. They made the playoffs.
There you go.
Because with a bunch of people, with a bunch of no names, he identifies talent very well. What worries me about that is that now that I think he might have been a good candidate. If you were going to go with an outside person for GM, you would have brought him in as the GM. But if he really wants to get back into coaching, provided he and Mike Burns can work well together and come to an understanding, I think he's one of the more intriguing options out there.
Yep.
The guy's obviously got an eye for talent. He obviously knows how to build a team. And if he's got the right people with him, the sky could be the limit.
I think he's a good candidate. Mariner I wasn't too sold on. And frankly, I don't think Mariner was sold on the Revs. He came out of the interview and announced that he had just accepted an extension with with Toronto. So that was
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God. So someone was talking about, this is kind of an aside, someone was talking about, has anybody like publicly announced a lack of interest in the job?
I think Mariner's saying that he was accepting the 2-year extension at Toronto is basically as close as we've gotten to somebody who said they don't want the job. You know, here you are, you've been given a head coaching position at an organization that the fans love you here. You were an assistant coach and they love you for some reason. But, you know, I think he basically just said, you know what, this organization doesn't have the backbone that it needs to succeed. And he went somewhere where, you know, he's starting to build a little bit more success, starting to build something up in Toronto. Maybe his quality of life is better up there, too. Who knows? Who knows what his reasons were? But I did like the fact that they're talking to Ralston, but also to Jay Heaps. And, you know, Jay, like Taylor, really bleeds navy blue, as does Steve Ralston. These guys really gave their all for the Revs on the field. And just talking to Jay at, you know, various practices, so you know, he's always down there watching the practices, and this guy's got a full-time job, he's got kids, he's got family, but he's always hanging around down there watching them. You can tell he really misses it and he wants to be involved more, and he's got an astute eye for how the players are interacting on the field and who's standing out and who isn't. It was great just sitting there watching one of the last practices that they had. I think he'd be an excellent candidate for coach.
I like him as an assistant coach.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do not want to give him the keys to the ship. I don't want him driving this car yet.
Well, because he doesn't have any coaching experience.
Exactly. And he's coming out of the booth. And I mean, I know he was a huge leader on the field, but I want him.
He'd get more red cards than Steve Nichol and Paul Mariner combined.
Oh yeah,
easily. As coach.
Easily, I want him. I want him on the bench, but I don't want him commanding the dugout. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep. I get you. I can see why you're hesitant there. I'm inclined to give a guy a chance. You know, this, especially somebody that's got previous working relationship with Mike Burns, is I think Mike Burns' last season with the team was Jay's first. So I think there might have been some crossover there. I'd have to go back and double check. I think Mike was here till 2000, 2001. I'm not sure. But I think Jay came in 99 or 2000. But the upshot is that they know each other. They've got a previous working relationship to some degree. Mike Burns was just the vice president of player personnel. You know, Jay's been in and around this organization, knows it very well, as does Steve Ralston, as does Taylor Twellman. And I know Taylor's expressed interest in coaching, and I think he's probably had a couple of offers there, and he turned them down in favor of commentating, because I don't think that it was the one job that he wanted. I think if somebody had offered him the Revolution job, he probably would have taken it.
Can you imagine a coaching staff with Twellman and Heaps as assistants, like under Ralston or even under Bliss or something like that?
That'd be awesome.
Oh my God, it'd be great. That would be fantastic. It'd be the highest paid coaching staff in MLS. LA, but it'd
be great. Yeah, that'd be kind of crazy. Kind of crazy. Well, hey man, we've been talking nonstop for about 45 minutes, though. So obviously there's a lot of stuff that needs to just kind of unfold with the Revolution. What are your real expectations now that they've made this kind of organizational change, and what are your expectations going forward for this team?
I don't know. I mean, how can you? It's been 10 years. How can you have any expectations? How can you know what to think at this point? I expect that the Revs are going to, you know, say all the right things about how they're going to try to get the best candidate possible, and I think that they will. Whether or not their definition of possible and the fans' definition of possible is the same is open for debate. But I think that they will get the best candidate they can. And I think going forward, it's going to be exciting at the very least. It's going to be upheaval. I unless they bring in a yes man or a guy who doesn't have a lot of experience and will kind of be cowed by the situation, I don't see the majority of this roster rejoining us next year.
No, and I don't either.
It's going to be real interesting to see how all that shakes out.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. And I'm really, really concerned that they're just going to put somebody in, somebody who's going to, you know, toe the line.
That also worries me.
And just, you know, be there so that they can go through the motions and have them kind of be an interim coach. You know, if they want to hire an interim coach, that's fine with me, but call him an interim coach. Don't say, yeah, he's got all the qualifications we're looking for when you know he's not the guy you want. And that's another thing that bugs me about Sunil Gulati is that here's a guy who goes out and he somehow manages to get Caleb Porter, and maybe Jurgen Klinsmann had a bigger part in this than people give him credit for. But, you know, as president of USSF, Sunil Gulati goes out and gets Caleb Porter to coach his Olympic team. You know, don't you think that he might have been able to find a recommendation for a coach for his own team? You know, before he rode off into the sunset. I just don't think this gets back into that other conversation we have about him being invested in the team, which I don't think he ever really was. But that ship has sailed. That horse is dead. I don't know what's the proper idiom for that.
Water under the bridge.
Water under the bridge. I like it. I like it. And so with that, I think we're going to sign off because I'm an old man and I'm getting tired. But Steve, thanks for coming on. What's the URL? What's the pimping? First the pimping and then the gimping.
TheBentMusket.com, www.TheBentMusket.com, obviously. Follow me at StoreST. Try to spell it, just see what you can do with it. Or at TheBentMusket.
Yep.
That would be... I might be moving on to a couple other things too. As an aside to that, I can't release details because it's not confirmed yet. But you can find everything that I do there, and you will always be able to find everything that I do there. So
excellent, bentmusket.com, ladies and gentlemen. It's Mr. Steve Storer. Thank you very much for coming on the Midnight Ride.
Thanks, Hank. Thanks for having me again.
Hey, not a problem. And guys, stay tuned for an update. Maybe later in the week from me, after I talk to Brian Bilello on Friday, and we'll see what he has to say about his expectations for the Revs in this coming season. So for Steve and for myself, thanks for listening to the Midnight Ride. We'll talk to you guys next week. Cheers.